Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today I'm going to continue reading from the EL 814. So let's get right to it. We left off with section 5 last time, and we are skipping section 6. You're welcome. And moving on to section 7, lifting, material handling, and other equipment. A, lifting guidelines. Lifting is so much a part of our everyday activity that most of us do not think about it, but it's often done incorrectly. The results can include strains, pulled muscles, disc lesions, or painful hernias. Before lifting anything, check the immediate area and route of travel to be sure that no obstruction or hazard can cause a slip, trip, or fall, or a striking against accident. The technique for proper lifting is simple. Assess the load. If it appears to be too heavy or bulky to lift comfortably, get help. All right, and so this applies when you're out on the street. If you have an item that you needed help to get it into your truck, you're going to need help to get it out of your truck as well. And so you may need to bring a dolly with you so that you can like shove it off onto the dolly and then use the dolly to get up to the customer's house. Maybe the customer will let you back into their driveway and you can just shove it out into the driveway. Maybe the customer themselves can help you, you know, use your judgment on that. But ultimately, if they say they can help, great. Because if it's team lift and you lift it on your own and then you get hurt, well, that's going to be on you. I mean, that's part of your job, and management should still, you know, address your injuries appropriately, but they're probably also going to try to issue discipline, and that's lame. Next, place one foot alongside the object being lifted and one behind. This method gives you greater stability, and your rear foot gives you better upward thrust. Use the sit-down position and keep your back in a straight line, though not necessarily perpendicular to the floor. A straight back keeps your spine, back muscles, and organs in correct alignment and minimizes the compression of organs that can cause a hernia. Okay, I don't know what the sit-down position is. Place one foot alongside the object being lifted and one behind. Okay, I can picture that. Like a box, I've got one, my left foot to the left of the box, and my right foot like between me and the box. Okay, but then use the sit-down position. I could picture a squat sitting down. I don't think that's the way to do it. That's got to be just a poor choice of words. Next, tuck in your chin so your neck and head are in a straight line with your back. That helps you keep your spine straight and firm. It is not necessary, however, to force your chin against your chest. A palm grip is one of the most important elements of correct lifting. Keep your fingers and hands extended around the object you are going to lift, using your full palm. Fingers alone have very little power. You need the strength of your entire hand. Keep the load you are lifting drawn close against your body. Tuck your arms and elbows against your side. When your arms are held away from your body, they lose much of their strength and power. Keeping your arms tucked in also helps keep your body weight centered. I'm going to go ahead and add to that that it helps to take advantage of leverage as well. And if you have the weight out away from your body, that puts additional strain on your lower back. So another reason to keep that load in close. Next, position your body so that your weight is centered over your feet. This provides a more powerful line of thrust and also ensures better balance. Start the lift with a thrust of your rear foot. Avoid twisting during lifting. Twisting is one of the most common causes of back injury. By simply turning your forward foot out and pointing it in the direction you are moving, you will avoid the greatest danger of injury. Do not fight to recover a dropping object or lost load. Get out of its way and let it fall. This reminds me of an anecdote from when I was growing up here in Las Vegas. We would go out on Lake Mead. One of my friends had a boat and he was a really good water skier. And so while we're sitting in the back of the boat, just watching him ski, it's very boring. Like, we could just ski in a straight line and he would just ski until he got bored. And those of us sitting in the boat would get bored a lot faster than he would because he's out there skiing. We're just sitting in the boat. And so we instituted a policy to make things more exciting that when you're about to crash, you have to try to recover. Because if you crash and you just bail, then you don't get hurt. You know, nothing bad happens. You just, oh, it looks like I'm not going to make this turn. You let go of the rope and you slowly sink into the water. But if you start to lose it and you try to recover, that's when the really good crashes happen. And so we had instituted the you know, the stuff teenagers do for fun. We had a rule that if you were going to crash, you had to try to recover. All right, but that is not the case here. To go back to where I was, do not fight to recover a dropping object or lost load. Get out of its way and let it fall. And this is for the same reason, because trying to recover leads to greater injuries. When you're a teenager, that's funny. When you're at the post office, it's not great. Next, sudden lifting or releasing of loads can cause stress to the spine and back muscles. Always lift, move, and lower with smooth motions. I will not make a joke about the sudden releasing of loads because I'm more mature than that. D, hand trucks, hampers, and containers. Okay, this is stuff that may be interesting to you. One, general rules. Do not ride, climb onto, or cross over any manually prepared propelled rolling equipment. Push rather than pull all hand trucks, containers, hampers, and other such equipment. Your hands must not protrude beyond the sides of the container you are pushing. Do not manually tow containers. And never overload equipment or load it so high that it is top heavy. So it doesn't specify here what constitutes overloading. I feel like I've seen it somewhere that anything over the line of the hamper, like anything that goes over the top of the hamper, is overloading. But that is not specified here. Well, maybe it is actually, because number two here is hampers. Keep clear of hamper dumpers in use. Avoid placing heavy objects, sacks of mail, or mail in trays in hampers. Dude, look at this. So where I work, my station, it's all hampers. We don't have the parcel volume to make us need the big metal cages. We use the plastic orange hampers, sometimes called pumpkins. And that's what this is. And it says, do not place mail in trays in hampers. I mean, I take everything to my truck in a hamper. What am I supposed to do with my DPS or my residual for that matter? My residual is also in a tray. So if I shouldn't put the mail that it's in trays in hampers, where should I put it? Well, it goes on to talk about packages. It says place heavy packages on flatbed trucks rather than in hampers. If you must remove a heavy package from a hamper, tip the hamper onto its side and lift the package from the floor to avoid excessive strain on your back. Use proper lifting techniques. So this looks like it's going to necessitate extra trips. And so be it. We get paid by the hour. You know, this is about learning to do the job the right way, learning to do the job in a way that's not going to get you in trouble, and learning to do the job in a way that's going to protect your route. So if you're a steward and you've had route inspections and management is complaining about a carrier taking two trips, well, here's some of your ammunition right here. You know, Section 8 of the EL814, the Guide to Safety, or Section 7, I should say, the carrier is doing it the right way. All right, moving on. Section 9. We skip Section 8. You're welcome. Mail delivery. Fingering mail. Never finger mail while driving, walking up and down steps or curbs, crossing streets, or at any other time the practice could create a safety hazard to you or the public. B. Hazardous conditions. Pay close attention when you are walking in order to avoid lawn depressions, stones, bits of wood, children's toys, and other tripping hazards. All right, so on the topic of fingering mail and hazardous conditions, one time when I was still pretty new, I was like a newly minted full-time regular, I'm on this walking route and it was overburdened and management was giving me a hard time about how long it was taking me. So the supervisor came out to follow me one day and see what was taking me so long. And he followed me for most of the day. And then before he left, he gave me a tip. He says, hey, when you finish delivering the mail at one house, I noticed that you immediately start walking to the next house and you start fingering your mail right away. That's a potential safety hazard. What you really need to do is stop and look before you start walking so that you're sure you have a clear path and you don't hurt yourself while you're trying to finger your mail. So that's good advice. You know, it helps with safety. That is not going to make me faster. And it's important to note that this is the kind of shit that management pulls. That all they say is faster, faster, faster. They want you to go faster. But if they actually come out and see the way you're delivering the mail, they're not going to generally give you tips for how to go faster. They're looking for, are you cutting corners? Are you doing safety violations? Are you doing procedural violations? Things like that. All those things are going to make you go slower. And so this is why it's important to know how to do the job the right way, to know what your rights are, to know what your responsibilities are, so that you don't have to fear management coming out and following you. In fact, that's your moment of vindication to show that, yes, I am doing it the right way. And when you give me a hard time about my speed, management, you're full of shit. All right, moving on. You are not required to risk personal injury from icy steps, broken or rotten steps or porches, protruding nails or sharp edges on mailbox, or similar hazardous conditions. Use PS Form 1767, Report of Hazard, Unsafe Condition, or Practice to report any of these problems to your supervisor. Alert replacement carriers to any hazardous conditions by completing PS Form 1766, the Hazard Warning Card. C. Mail Collection. When collecting mail from a street box or a mail chute receiving box, or when delivering mail to apartment house boxes or neighborhood delivery and collection box units, NDCBUs that are equipped with an aerolock, remove the key from the lock to avoid personal injury or damage to your clothing or keys. So that's a question. That's one of these controversial topics that Michael and I might talk about is, while you're delivering to a cluster box, do you keep the key in there or do you take the key out? Well, this is very clear. Remove the key from the lock to avoid personal injury or damage to your clothing or keys. I would also say remove the key because if you need to make a quick getaway, like if a dog comes out, then you don't want to be hooked up to that CBU. Next, keep the chain for your mailbox keys securely fastened to your belt loop, not your belt, your belt loop. And place the keys and chain in your pocket when you are not using them. Dangling, swinging keys and chains can be dangerous. So here it doesn't say why you want to put it on your belt loop rather than your belt. And this is a caveat with all of this stuff. Remember from episode 1 of the EL814, you are not supposed to take this manual home. You're only supposed to read it while you're on the clock. And so you're not really expected to know the information in here. This information in here is useful to you to do things the right way and to keep management off your back and to potentially use against management. But if you're attaching your arrow key to your belt instead of your belt loop, management would be really hard pressed to use this passage from the EL814 against you. Knowing stuff like this gives us the upper hand. And that's what we want. Next, use PS Form 1767 to report defective, dented, or unanchored collection or relay boxes to your supervisor so that corrective action can be taken. Do not try to force entry or to dented or otherwise defective collection or relay boxes. Always check the contents of mailboxes for broken glass, bottles, insects, or animals before placing your hands inside. So the pro tip, the way that collection people do it at the post office, is you're going to have a tub or bucket inside the collection box, and you just slide that tub out, you replace it with a fresh tub, and that way you can see what's inside the tub before you just go reaching your hand in there. Next, never stand in the street when loading or emptying mailboxes. Do not place mail in or collect mail from any boxes that require you to stand in the street. Use PS Form 1767 to report such boxes to your supervisor so that corrective action can be taken. This brings us to another controversial topic where somebody actually posted, this was amazing to me, somebody posted on Facebook that they only deliver cluster boxes from inside the mail truck. And where I deliver, here in Vegas, generally, the cluster box is on the other side of the sidewalk, and you stand on the sidewalk and deliver that cluster box. Well, to deliver it from the truck, the mailbox, the cluster box would have to be like on the street, right at the curb. And if that's the case, then we have a safety violation here because you would have to be in the street in order to service that mailbox. And that makes me wonder too about, like, I'm on a park and loop route and some people have put their mailbox all the way out to the curb. Well, where I deliver, there is no sidewalk. Their yards go all the way up to the curb on the street. And so when I deliver those, I'm walking in the street and I'm standing in the street to deliver that mailbox. And so this definitely makes it sound like that's a safety hazard. Again, never stand in the street when loading or emptying mailboxes. Moving on. D, animals and insects. One, general rules. You are not required to deliver mail when an animal threatens you. Use extra care in making deliveries when dogs or other animals are loose on your route. Prepare PS Form 1778, dog animal warning card, and place it in the letter case whenever you observe an animal that may interfere with the delivery of the mail. Place the card in front of the address where the hazard has been observed. In a situation where the dog poses a threat throughout a segment of the route, case the card at an address most appropriate to provide advanced warning. So you don't really want to put the card at the address for the house, because by the time the carrier sees it, like your sub, they're already at the house. And so the card is too late. It didn't give them any advance notice to beware. So that's why they say, you know, put it like a few addresses ahead. In addition, report any such interference to your supervisor so that the customer may be notified that the animal must be restrained. Never antagonize a dog. Never attempt to pet or feed a dog. If a dog rushes toward you or takes you by surprise, do not run. Retreat very slowly, facing the dog. Keep your mail satchel between you and the dog as a first line of defense. Be careful not to stumble over objects as you retreat. This is good advice here. I've kicked around the idea of having a whole episode about dog attacks. I've certainly been attacked by dogs enough times. Maybe I've already done that episode. I don't know. When you get over 200 episodes, it's hard to remember all the ones that I've done. But I will say that this is good advice where, you know, I have my satchel with me when I go to the door or when I'm in somebody's yard. It's policy here in Las Vegas, but it's good policy generally. And it works pretty well in my experience as a physical barrier between you and the dog. And then as far as don't run, I'm not going to outrun a dog. I mean, I'll do the mental math. And if I can get to the truck before the dog can, then yeah, I will run to the truck if I can win that foot race. But if the dog surprises me and the dog's right on me, running is not going to work. That is only going to make the dog even more want to eat me. Let's see. Next, use dog repellent spray only if you are attacked. Spray it directly at the dog's eyes, nose, and mouth. Do not use dog repellent indiscriminately or when there is danger of spraying children or adults. Dude, I'm not worried about spraying adults. Like, if it's the dog owner and accidentally spray them too, hey man, collateral damage. You know, it's ultimately the human's responsibility anyway to keep that dog under control. Next, when delivering mail through a door slot, keep your fingers out of the slot. An animal may be on the other side. You guys have all seen those videos where the mail comes through the slot and the dog like tears up the mail. It could do that to your fingers. In fact, I have a dog on my route that puts his face in the door slot and he is not interested in the mail. He brushes the mail to the side to try to get my fingers. Next, when delivering mail to a customer's door, keep your foot on the door so that a dog cannot unexpectedly rush out at you. For me, I generally just try to keep space between me and the door. So if I knock on the door, I back up and give enough space. If rabies has been officially reported in the community where you are delivering mail, be especially observant of any dogs, cats, or wild animals. Two, medical treatment of animal bites or insect stings. If you are bitten, get medical treatment immediately, regardless of the severity of the injury. Even small bites or contact with animal saliva can transmit rabies. Wash the area with soap and water as soon as possible. If you have severe or allergic reactions to insect stings, you must inform your supervisor and, if available, the medical or health unit. Use caution in removing mail from receptacles to avoid stings from any insects inside. So we used to have, we would talk about bees at the Carrier Academy, and I had this picture of a mailbox, maybe you've seen it too, that bees have taken over, and there's like a bee colony on the mailbox. And so, you know, we talk about we definitely would not deliver to a box like that. You're going to skip that house. But it brings up this little bit of trivia about African killer bees, which we do have here in Las Vegas. So do you guys know how to tell the difference between like just normal US bees and the African killer bees? Well, it's pretty straightforward. The African killer bees are a little bit larger. They're black and yellow. And the most important thing is that they're really aggressive and they will come after you and just keep stinging, keep stinging. Whereas the US bees are the little ports in your computer where you plug in the wires. Ah, good times. Section 10, motor vehicles. And I think this is our last section. All right, here we go. Vehicle accidents are a major source of serious personal injury for Postal Service employees. Defensive driving is the best way to prevent vehicle accidents because it involves both the desire and the ability of a driver to control accident-provoking situations. You are expected to drive all Postal Service vehicles in a dependable, efficient, safe, and courteous manner. A. Licenses. Only authorized personnel can operate Postal Service vehicles. You must have in your possession a valid state driver's license when operating a Postal Service vehicle or any vehicle when on Postal Service business. You must inform your supervisor immediately if your state driver's license is revoked or suspended. B. Civil laws. You must obey all local traffic laws when driving any Postal Service vehicle. You will receive no special privileges or rights as a Postal Service driver. Police citations for traffic violations are your personal responsibility. Promptly report them to your supervisor while on duty. So again, guys, we get no special privileges with regard to traffic laws, and that includes parking. C, civil laws. You must obey all... Oh no, I already read that one. C, reporting accidents. If you are involved in an accident, stop at the scene. Aid or assist any injured person. Have someone call for an ambulance or the police if necessary. Safeguard the scene against any further accidents. Safeguard the mail. Try to identify several witnesses. Promptly notify your supervisor. Follow the instructions in your item 087H accident report kit and any local accident reporting instructions. D. Vehicle. Oh, and you should also contact your union representative, because management is going to conduct an investigation into this crash, and you want the union to be able to conduct that investigation as well, because management are not traffic cops. They're not professional traffic accident investigators, and you're going to need that other perspective when it's investigative interview time. All right, D, vehicle regulations. One, vehicle safety inspections. Make a daily safety check of your assigned vehicle as outlined in Notice 76, Expanded Vehicle Safety Check, before leaving the post office, parking lot, or garage. Inspect leased trailers for damage or placards that may not be appropriate, such as flammable or hazardous waste, etc. Check to make sure that a sealed accident report kit is provided inside your assigned vehicle. Use PS Form 4565 Vehicle Repair Tag to report all mechanical defects, failures, and vehicle damage to your supervisor. 2. Safety belts. You must wear safety belts at all times the vehicle is in motion. When driving a long life vehicle, LLV, or the carrier route vehicle, CRV, dude, what is the CRV? This, I think that predates me, which goes to show you how old this EL814 is. You must wear the lap belt and shoulder belt whenever the vehicle is in motion. Exception. All right, things are about to get interesting. Exception. Okay, the context here is you must wear the lap and shoulder belt whenever the vehicle is in motion. All right, this is the rule that we're talking about. Anytime that vehicle is moving, your lap belt's on and your shoulder belt's on. Here is the exception to that rule, the rule of lap and shoulder belt. When shoulder belts prevent you from reaching to deliver or collect from curbside mailboxes, you may unfasten the shoulder belt, but never the lap belt. So, okay, here's my take on this. The way it's written, it's talking about the rule for when the vehicle is in motion. So, with the shoulder belt... I've heard some interpretations that say you can only take the shoulder belt off while you're actively reaching for the box. And then in between boxes, as you drive from one box to the other, you have to hook the shoulder belt back up. But this rule the way it's written makes it seem like that's not the case. Whenever the vehicle is in motion. So it's not talking about when you're stopped at a mailbox trying to service it. It's talking about when the vehicle is in motion. So the way it's written, it makes it seem like you can drive without the shoulder belt. But there are other restrictions. I don't remember if they come up later in this section about if you're going more than 500 feet, more than 15 miles an hour crossing an intersection, then you have to have that shoulder belt on. But just going from box to box, looks like you don't have to reattach it when you're just going from box to box. Again, unless you're crossing an intersection, going above 15 miles an hour or more than 500 feet. Maybe there's more on this later. I don't think there is. You may carry only authorized passengers. All passengers must remain seated and wear a lap belt and shoulder belt harness whenever the vehicle is in motion. 3, doors. When you are traveling to and from your route, when you are moving between park and relay points, and when you are entering or crossing intersecting roadways, you must be sure that all vehicle doors are closed. All right, so this again is kind of that same sort of restriction. Well, when you're going from box to box, you can have the door open. All vehicle doors must be secured when the vehicle is left unattended and out of the driver's immediate sight. Exceptions. Okay, so once again, we have a context here for this exception. The rule that is being accepted is all vehicle doors must be secured when the vehicle is left unattended and out of the driver's immediate sight. So this would be like when you get out to go up to somebody's front door to drop a package, then you have to lock up all the doors on your LLV. Exceptions. The Postal Service fleet includes a number of 1-ton, 2-ton, and 2.5-ton step van style vehicles that have left-hand drive compartments with sliding doors and closed cargo areas, like the ProMaster, for example. When driving these vehicles, keep the rear door closed and close the left door when the vehicle is in motion. You may leave the right door open, however. If there is no passenger, mail, or loose equipment in the cab area and the cargo partition is closed. So the right door, I don't know what kind of vehicle this refers to, because a ProMaster, like, it's talking about a left-hand drive vehicle, step van style vehicle. I don't know, like, the ProMaster has a step, it's a left-hand drive, it's a van. Is this the ProMaster? I mean, the ELA 14 obviously predates the ProMaster, but is this what it's talking about? Because the right-hand door, like, it can't be talking about the sliding cargo door. It would have to be like what you would consider the passenger door. And there's no real way to leave that door open. So there must have been vehicles at one time that were like sliding, like bread trucks, you know, like the ones that collections still drive today. Maybe there's some routes that still have it, where you could drive with that door open. I don't know why you would. I guess just for the ease of getting in and out. It's weird. If you know the backstory behind this regulation, by all means, send it along. classesofmail@gmail.com. All right, next. When you are operating a vehicle on delivery routes and traveling in intervals of 500 feet or less at speeds no greater than 15 miles per hour between delivery stops, you may leave the door on the driver's side open. You must still close the door when traveling through intersections. So there's that regulation we were talking about earlier. E, driving regulations. 1, general rules. Never finger mail or hold it in your hands while you drive. Move your vehicle only when you are absolutely certain that it is safe to do so, especially if children may be nearby. If necessary, get out, circle your vehicle, and check underneath it to make sure. Yield the right-of-way and make any other concessions necessary to avoid an accident. Always maintain a safe stopping distance, being especially careful during adverse weather. When following another vehicle in clear weather, you can judge necessary distance between it and your vehicle by using the 4-second rule. Choose a landmark. When the vehicle ahead of you passes it, begin to count. 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004. If you pass the landmark between or before you reach 1004, you are following too closely. During adverse weather, stay farther behind the vehicle in front of you. If you are following larger trucks, 1 ton or more, increase the time lapse to 6 seconds. I would guess that's because it reduces your visibility, because the big trucks block more of, you know, of what you can see of what's upcoming. Next, use your turn signal before turning, changing lanes, or pulling to or away from the curb or shoulder of the road. Okay, so this applies to curbside delivery, out the window routes. Every time you go toward the curb and away from the curb, you're supposed to use your turn signal. Enter all unregulated and or unprotected intersections slowly and cautiously. Slow down and do not enter the cross street until you are sure you can do so safely. Before entering any intersection, slow down and look left, then right, then left again. Remember that danger is always closer from the left when the roadway is two-directional. Never wear headphones or headsets or any other device that can diminish your hearing while you are operating a motor vehicle. 2. Speed. Always drive at a safe speed. Never exceed the speed limit, but keep in mind that under certain conditions, the posted speed limit may not be the safe one. So it's saying that sometimes you have to go even slower. 3. Backing up. Avoid backing up wherever, whenever possible. If you can, park where you will not have to back up to pull away from parking space. If you must back up, first walk around your vehicle to make sure there are no pedestrians, children, obstructions, etc. in your way. When backing a large vehicle, have someone guide you whenever possible. The guide should stand to the side and rear of the vehicle and use hand signals, not oral directions. Never allow the guide to get out of your vision, especially behind your vehicle. You might unknowingly crush the guide against some object. Oh, that'd be terrible. Even when you use a guide, it is your responsibility to back up safely. Use both rearview mirrors and have them properly adjusted. Drivers who are required to turn a vehicle around in one continuous operation, such as rural carriers making turnarounds, must use extreme caution when backing up. Look, listen, and live at all railroad crossings. Obey all highway rail crossing warnings. 4. Parking. Whenever the driver leaves the vehicle must be parked. To park the vehicle. All right, this is a controversial topic that Michael and I got into recently. This is how you park. And it doesn't, it's parking anytime you park, right? You're going to park the truck and you're going to get out of it. That's parking. Here we go. Apply the foot brake and place automatic transmissions in park. Place manual transmissions in gear. Turn the vehicle's front wheels toward the curb if you are on a flat surface or the vehicle is facing downhill. If the vehicle is parked facing uphill, turn the front wheels away from the curb. Okay, so toward the curb, even if you're on flat ground. So you're going to turn it to the right, essentially. And if you're going downhill, you turn it to the right. The idea is that the truck is immediately going to roll into the curb and it's not going to go any further. What we don't want is if for some reason the truck starts rolling, it just keeps going. And then if you're going uphill, you turn it to the left so that, again, if the truck starts to roll, those front wheels are immediately going to come in contact with the curb and the truck is going to stop. So on flat ground, you know, there is no exception here for a parking lot. It just says flat ground. You turn the wheels toward the curb. So if you are nose in on a parking space and you're up against the curb, then it's reasonable to have your wheels straight, just going into the curb. As long as your wheels are going to immediately hit that curb, then I think you're okay. And that would probably be the same for backing up as well. The wheels that are in contact with the curb, you can't turn those wheels if you're backing up. And so having them straight is probably fine. I don't think there would be an issue with it in a parking lot with not turning your wheels. For me, I turn the wheels every time because it's just a good habit. You know, it's certainly not prohibited here. And I would turn the wheels every time. But I think Michael was right that in a parking lot with curbs, not an open parking lot that just has lines, but on a parking lot with curbs, as long as your wheels are going to come in contact with that curb, I think you're all right. Next, set the hand parking / emergency brake. Turn off the engine and remove the key. Lock any sliding doors between the truck body and cab. I can tell you, at least here, people almost never do this. The sliding door between the cab of the LLV and the back, is pretty much always left open. And it is one of those things that you can do to add time to your route for route inspection. And also here, it's the right way to do it, you know, is to lock that door. And that helps to protect the mail. Like, it's pretty easy to break into the front of an LLV, but it's hard to break into the back. And so if you close and lock that door, then that mail is very secure. Next, lock the doors if you'll be out of direct sight of the vehicle. 5, passengers. Ride in Postal Service-owned, GSA-owned rental or contract vehicles only if you are authorized to do so. All passengers must use safety belts. If conventional passenger seats are not provided, use an approved auxiliary seat that faces forward and is equipped with a backrest and safety belts. Never stand in a vehicle that is in motion. 6, loading. Make sure that any mail you load into a vehicle will pose no hazard to the operator when the vehicle is started, stopped, turned, or otherwise operated on a mail delivery route. Do not place large parcels, bulky items, or bundles of mail on the tray or ledge to the extent they can obscure your vision or break the windshield during a sudden stop. Always use proper lifting techniques when loading mail into a vehicle. And finally, here's the last one, 7, and then we're done. Parking lots. Park in designated spaces only. Use designated traffic lanes only. Observe posted speed limits. Unless posted otherwise, the maximum speed is 10 miles an hour. Follow one-way directional signals or directional signs in traffic lanes. Observe traffic signals when entering and leaving Postal Service premises. Do not throw litter in parking lots. Use receptacles that are provided. Obey all posted signs in the parking and access road areas. And finally, do not park in or block fire lanes. And that's it, guys. We did it. We read the entire EL 814. Good job, us. So that's all I have for now. Thank you guys for listening along. If there's another manual that you think I should read, something like the EL 814, like I've been thinking about reading the timekeeping manual, something like that, let me know. And I will, I'm going to read it all eventually. So if you have a priority, if you have a good reason why you think I should read, like there's a manual that I'm still interested in, which is Management's Guide to Handling Grievances. I think that'd be a really good one to read. So anyway, that's all I have for now, guys. Thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you all next time.